Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. Today, we have a special guest, Mr. Brian Moran. You bring over 30 years of experience as a CEO, corporate executive, entrepreneur, consultant, and coach with career stops along the Fortune 500 highway, UPS, PepsiCo, Northern Automotive. As an entrepreneur, you've consulted for dozens of world-class companies, including Coldwell Banker, Mass Mutual, Medtronic, New York Life, Tiffany & Company. And as an author, you have a New York Times bestseller, The 12-Week Year, which presents the notion that most people don't lack ideas, but they struggle with effective implementation. And then last, as a visionary, you bring a passion for helping others go beyond what they think are what they think they're capable of and achieve more than what is ever possible. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, man. I love having these types of conversations, but I have to ask you, I've been asking a lot of my guests this, but this is out of genuine concern. How are you coping with the pandemic? Because studying you, I know that you do a lot of speaking and things of that nature. So a lot of that probably has been muted or maybe slowed down since we've been in this. Like, how have things been going with you?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. You know, we've had to pivot like a lot of organizations. You know, the speaking business went away and it was pretty big source of revenue, not to mention, it introduces people to the 12-week year by the thousands. And so we've had to kind of reinvent that. You know, I had a studio in the office with a green screen. We created a whole nother studio with a video wall behind it. So our virtual events are as good or in some cases almost better than in person because we're able to do a little bit more with them. And so we're doing keynotes and half days and it's been going great. But it was, you know, I mean, it wasn't there. We had to create it and get the word out on it. And so it's worked well. But like everybody, you know, you've got to pivot. You got to figure out ways to make your business work and get your message out regardless of what's happening.
No, I love that you said that. I was we had Phil Jones, Mr. Exactly What to Say, on for season 2. I think it was episode 11, but I asked him the same thing because, you know, he has the international travel thing going on with across the pond. And I asked him the same thing. And he's like, yeah, I had to pivot and I had to, you know, start to go back to some of the things that I built this business on, you know, relationships and helping people and all that kind of stuff to help that pivot. So I'm glad to hear things are going well and that you've retooled and drilled down within every chaotic opportunity, within every instance of chaos, there's opportunity, right?
There is. Absolutely. Yeah. And so you got to be looking for it and you got to be willing to try some things because they may not work the first time. And so you got to go at it again and again. Yeah.
I think that's an excellent backdrop for what we're going to discuss today, which is this ultimate guide to productivity. So I work with a lot of aspiring financial professionals, current financial professionals. Obviously, I have my own wealth management practice. I think this is a subject that spans all those spectrums. No matter who you are, what you do, what you're trying to do, having this sense of mindset of how can I be more productive, and not from this sense of just trying to wring out a little bit more juice out of the onion or the lemon or whatever that you're using. I think it, from a standpoint of your highest and best use, right? That's the idea of this. So I want to bifurcate our discussion into two areas. First, let's talk about kind of like the dilemma, what everybody struggles with, and then the solution, because I think you have an excellent solution. I've definitely drank the Kool-Aid, and we can talk about that a little bit.
That's good.
Let's start with New Year's resolutions, right? Because this is something very, very germane to all of us. And I want to talk about specifically the intentionality around New Year's resolutions. At the time of this recording, we're in May of 2021. And there's undoubtedly some people that have made some New Year's resolutions that they have not followed through on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering, what do you know about why this happens to most people? This is your space. I'm going to let you shine here because you know a lot about this. Why does that happen to people? Why do we have this intentionality that never comes to fruition?
Yeah, there's a couple things in play there. One is, you know, a New Year's resolution or any goal is a stated intention. Right. You're coming out and whether you make it public or not, it's at least for you, it's stated. I'm saying, OK, This is what I intend to do. One of the challenges with New Year's resolutions is they're typically done annually, right? So, and as you know, from the 12-week year, 12 months is just too long a time frame. It's just too easy to put things off. I never get started, or I rationalize I got plenty of time. So that's one of the issues with it. It's typically done in the context of 12 months, too long a time frame. The second is that I've got the stated intention, but for the most part, there's hidden intentions that I'm not aware of that conflict with it. And so understanding and kind of calling those into the light and then reconciling that conflict is really important. The third thing that trips people up is New Year's resolutions are always about outcomes, which is great. That's what we want. But we don't control the outcomes. We control the actions. So, you know, it's as important, perhaps even more important, to commit to the action as it is the outcome. So your typical one is losing weight, right? I'm going to lose X amount of pounds or whatever. But in order to do that, I'm going to have to take specific actions. I'm going to have to work out. I'm going to have to do some things like that. Understanding what those actions are, understanding the price you have to pay for them, the cost, the discomfort that comes with them, and then, you know, choosing to pay that price and committing to the action is important. So you've got a number of factors there that just, unless people are operating differently and addressing those factors, they're not going to be very successful. In fact, 80%+ of the people by the end of February have given up on their annual goals, their New Year's resolutions. It's a challenge.
I mean, and this is funny, you know, in the last full year that I was going to the gym, which I guess would have been 2019, you know, you see all these people, that come in like January through beginning of February. It's like packed. Right. It's like, get off this machine. Yeah. I want to be here. Right. And then by the end of February, they're all gone. It's a ghost town again. Gone, so, I get what you're saying.
What cracks me up about the whole gym experience, and I do the same thing, is you'll drive around for a spot up close, and then you go in and you get on the treadmill. You know, and it's like, well, maybe you should just park at the back of the lot and it would have, you know, forget the treadmill. But it's just interesting the way we do things.
Now, I want to unpack something a little deeper, because you said stated intention, and then those kind of like the things beneath the surface. I wonder if you can go into that a little bit more, because there is some what I call these negative self-talk tracks that kind of run in the background, and they're just playing on a loop about, you know, you tried to do this in 2019, Brian. Sure. This didn't really work. So maybe talk about that a little bit, because I think that plays into it a lot.
Yeah, you've got two things going on there. One, you've got a set of hidden intentions that aren't necessarily negative. They're just in conflict with the stated intention, right? So let's take two examples. The losing weight, right? My stated intention is I'm going to lose weight. There are things below the surface, though, that I'm not really aware of. One, I love cheesecake, right? Two, I love beer. Three, I just, you know, I feel like at the end of the day, I deserve to just camp out on the couch, right? There's things like that. Most of these hidden intentions tend to be around our comfort. Let's talk about something that might even be more relevant for your listeners, which is I'm going to build my practice through referrals. So at the stated level, I'm going to ask for referrals every time. Well, what could get in the way of me asking referrals? Well, there's this notion of I might be rejected. I might compromise the sale. I might make the client or the prospect uncomfortable. I haven't earned it. I don't deserve it, right? If that's kind of going on underneath the surface, it's unlikely that I'm going to ask consistently for referrals. Unless I figure out, you know, kind of how to deal with that stuff, I can say I'm going to ask for referrals every time. I'm not going to ask. And so you've got that set of hidden intentions that for most people, they're unaware of them. And so what we're talking about is let's take stock of what those are. And then are you willing to pay that price? Are you willing to overcome that stuff for the period of time? And then there's the other stuff you were talking about, which is some of the doubt that creeps in and some of the mindset that says you've tried this before, it didn't work, right? That type of stuff, which can be even more challenging than the hidden intention. The hidden intentions, typically you'll find a way to reconcile those. And that's why 12-week goals work better than annual goals, because I can go without cheesecake for 12 weeks. You tell me I can never have cheesecake again, that's a problem, right? That kind of stuff, right? Right? I can do anything for 12 weeks. And so we build that commitment muscle. But the mindset that comes into play that that little voice in our head that says, hold on, you know, what makes you think you can be successful with this? What, you've tried this before, that type of stuff. You know, the technique we use to overcome that is really just kind of acknowledging it rather than fighting it, just acknowledge it. But then ask the question, but what if I could? What if I were successful this time? What might be different for me? What might be different for my family and my clients and my customers? And even if it's like losing weight, what might be different for my customers? Well, I have more energy for them. You know, there's research that shows that if I'm physically fit, I'm mentally clear, right? So, I mean, there's all these, just play with that what if, so that you know, begin to move in that direction and you silence that little voice that says, no, not you, right? That's not possible for you.
No, I love that. The power of the what if, that's a whole soundbite in itself. What I wondered if you just park on this for one other point around intentionality. What role, if any, do you believe social media impacts this? You know, I grew up as a kid in the 90s and, you know, the internet was really just taking off when I graduated college. And so there was no social media image to keep up with. I mean, it was, we talked on phones and stuff like that, you know? So I wonder in this day and age with the, you know, in every decade or every generation has its own challenges, but I wonder to what extent do you feel social media and that image branding and all that kind of keeping up with the Joneses, all that plays into this?
I think it's really challenging. I think it's challenging, especially for the youth. You know, when you're 14 and 15 and, you know, you're so self-absorbed, you think everybody's looking at that. You think everybody's staring at your pimple, right? You think everyone's looking at what you're wearing and they're all concerned about themselves, not you, but you feel that way. And I think the technology today, especially social media, really exacerbates that. It makes us even more narcissistic, which especially at an early age is not good, but at any age, right? Everybody wants to be a celebrity now. That's sort of the deal. And that's not what life is about. You know, I mean, I'm faith-based, and so I don't mean to offend anyone, but I don't think God made us to be celebrities. Mm. Now he gifted you and made you with certain talents. And that's what I think it's about. It's about achieving and living into what you're capable of. It's not about how many people like you or what, you know, how many people think you're a celebrity or follow you. So I think there's an overemphasis on the social media has put that on the brand and the technology. And you know, the technology, they use the psychology of addiction with it. So you're constantly drawn back to it. And it's almost an unfair advantage social media has when you start using it and engaging with it, because it does take you away from the things you can control, right? You can't control how many people like you. You can't control whether or not you're a celebrity. And so to me, pursuing that stuff is just going to, for most people, it's going to be very disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah, I have to agree with you in that this level of, and this is a term I got from a former employer, you know, seeking our highest and best use, regardless of, you know, how many people's like us or the level of engagement we get or whatever, because we are very purpose driven. This actually leads into my next point that I wanted to ask you about. So back in the 70s or so, Dr. Maxwell Maltz wrote a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. Have you read this book?
Yeah, years ago.
Yeah. So it's a really old read. And he talks about, it's this notion in here that we're these goal striving human beings, which also kind of correlates to the fact that our brains operate like a turn-by-turn GPS. Like we have to feed it instructions in order for it to know where to go. And it works pretty well that way. And I wonder, with this power of intentionality kind of turned on its head the right way, how powerful that can be towards us reaching our highest and best use. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's absolutely powerful. It starts with, you know, when we talk about intentionality, it starts by determining for yourself what you want your life to look like. Because if you don't do that, social media advertisers are more than happy to tell you, you know, what a successful life looks like. And it's going to be, for most people, it's going to be very disappointing. So really starting with, look, what do I want my life to look like? And doing the work around that, the deep thought around that to figure out what does success look like for me? And then what are the things I need to do from an activity standpoint to live into that? So the intentionality starts at a 30,000 foot view, but carries through the day-to-day actions, right? If I'm not intentional about what I engage with, what I say yes to, what I say no to, then I have very little control over where I end up. And so I can have great goals for the future, but if I'm not intentional about what I'm engaging with, they're pipe dreams. They're not really goals. And again, I'm going to be frustrated. I'm going to be spinning my wheels and feeling like, you know, why doesn't this stuff work for me? Well, it doesn't work for you because you're not doing the work. You're not doing the heavy lifting. And so the notion of intentionality for us starts at the vision level, but carries through day to day. You know, what am I choosing to do this day, this moment? And is it productive? And is it highest, best use? You know, even with social media, with any technology, there's benefits, there's drawbacks. You know, rather than trying to be a celebrity, just go try and make a difference for people. Right? If you're going to be on social media, make a difference for people. At least encourage them. At the very least, be an encouragement to others. And you'll find that the people that you want to associate with will be drawn to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're preaching here. I think, you know, when we start to pivot from the problem / the dilemma of, let's call it, intentionality gone wrong, how intentionality gone right can be the solution. You mentioned some things about vision, and I just want to underscore something that you didn't necessarily say, but I see this in that a lot of people go after the outcome, like you said earlier, the results, but it's actually your mindset, your behaviors, the things you do, the way you think, the way you act that will give you the results that you want. So it's all these little things that you're doing on a daily basis consistently. You know, it's, you know, the boring routine of I get up in the morning, I have my devotional time, I do this, I eat, you know, those little things will over time be what you end up becoming. It's so funny. It's almost like I can't remember who said it, Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett. He's like, you know, usually our default position on, you know, stock decisions and stuff like this is benign neglect, right? It's this boring routine that we continue to do over and over, and it ends up giving us the results. So I want to say that to set up, let's talk about, and it may take a little while to unpack this, but let's talk about vision. Are you ready to accelerate your progress? Are you ready to make the leap into the financial services industry? Maybe you're about 12 to 18 months away and you want a sneak peek on what it's going to be like. I got you covered. It's called the Jumpstart Accelerator Group. These are individuals that are looking to make the leap into the financial services industry in the next 12 to 18 months. And what I'm going to do to help accelerate your progress is I'm going to pair you with one of my professional development program cohort graduates. These are people that are just like you, probably a few steps ahead because they've already gone through the program and they are already on their journey. They can share their wins, they can share their experience, they can share their perspective with you. And they're gonna do this inside some mini coaching sessions. As you go through that, you're going to really, really understand what it's gonna take to make the leap properly. All of this, and I'm throwing in some lifetime access to some bonus trainings that I think are really gonna help you get started. For more information, check the link below or send me an email to hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. And now it's time to get back to the conversation. I think this is the crux of what you're saying here and what we read about in the 12-week year and the whole system is having the clearest vision for what goal you're trying to reach for yourself. How do we start there? How can you have a solid vision for your life? Where does that start, Brian?
Yeah, so some people kind of do that work naturally. Most of us, though, have to sit down and really kind of work through that. And so, you know, we do some different exercises. You've probably seen Have, Do, Be and some of that type of stuff. But anything you can do to spur some thought. But then we take two cuts at it. We look long term, 5, 10, 15 or more years into the future. And we say, okay, what do you want your life to look like? And let's put it on paper. And that makes people a little nervous when you start to put it on paper, but it's like, look, you can change it. It's your vision. It's your life. You have the right to go in and adjust it or amend it or go in a completely different direction. But let's look at what great would be. Not mediocre, not good, but great. God willing, you're going to be here. Let's make it great. And so what excites you? What makes you nervous, right? If you put a long-term vision on the paper and there's nothing about it that makes you a little uncomfortable, a little nervous, then you're not stretching enough. You're not digging into really challenging your contribution and what you're capable of. And then we bring that near term for us to 36 months. And it starts to get more specific and it starts to get even more uncomfortable. But same concept there. Let's find something that's really exciting, that that there's an emotional connection to it, right? There's this fire deep inside that says, man, I can't wait to be standing in that ground. I can't wait to be living that life because it enables so much for me. That's where that what if comes in, right? What if I could be standing that ground? What would be different for me? What can I do for my family that I can't do now? What can I do for others, people I love and people I care for, and my customers and things like that, that I can't do now? And then hanging on to that. So then we build 12-week goals aligned with that. But it's really staying connected to that longer-term vision, because that's the why. So I connect that to the activity that, like you were talking about, we call it the daily mundane, right? The things I have to do day in and day out. So I connect those two together. So there's a strong connection there. And then the stronger that connection is, the easier it's going to be for me to do those things on a daily, weekly basis. You look at why Olympic athletes are so disciplined. Well, they're disciplined because they have this constant picture of how they want to perform in their mind. And when the cheesecake shows up, they don't think about how great the cheesecake's going to taste. They think about how they're going to perform. And that's true for anyone that accomplishes anything great in life. You create this picture in as much detail as you can, and then you hold on to it, you stay connected to it. Because the research on the brain says that when you do that, there's neurons that fire. And the neurons that fire when you think about a life of greatness are the same neurons that fire when you act on it, which is really profound, because that, what that tells us is we can train ourselves to act on these things by thinking about them. That's why vision's so critical. That's why it's the cornerstone of all high performance. You know, some people think it's fluff, and it's not. It's the bedrock of success in any area of life.
I have my own story here. I'll give the short version of this. So I graduated high school in Hawaii. And in my senior year, I actually still hold the record for the highest high jump by a Hawaiian prep. And what you just said, there's this whole notion in psycho-cybernetics about the theater of the mind, and you'll know about this, where I didn't know about this book, but for whatever was going on in my life, I visioned, I want to break the record. What's going to take me to break the record? I envisioned myself going over the bar, doing all this stuff. Never jumped that high before. It was like 6'4", 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", 6'9", all of a sudden. But it was like I had seen myself go through the steps, the routine, everything. And of course, I put the work in during the track season. But the point is, I saw that in my mind before it actually happened. And so I know how powerful you're saying that. And for the people that are like, they're, oh, that's hokey. And I'm like, you have not allowed your brain. You're limiting your brain. You're limiting your potential, because this thing can happen, and you really have to see it before it can happen. So I love that you said
that. You're limiting yourself because you're not using the science of the brain. I mean, it's not woo-woo. It's science that says the brain works that way. And so take advantage of that. I mean, why stack the odds against yourself, right?
I heard something the other day. I was in my Bible study. I was in my men's Bible study. And they said the level of faith that's operating in some of the world's top athletes, and they use LeBron, because they're like, just think about him. He's never had his dream not fulfilled. He's thought that he can be in the NBA. He's now in the NBA. He thought he can win multiple championships. He's now won multiple championships. He's never been unvarnished in his dreaming capability. And it's like, wow, like if we can tap into a piece of that, like how much more can we accomplish in our lives?
One of the challenges, though, I think when people see that, they think, well, that was easy for him. And I can guarantee you there were struggles along the way for him as well, both from his thinking and his actions, right? I think we're led to believe today, and social media feeds us, that the success curve is straight up, that it's and it's practically overnight. And for most people, that's not the way it is. It's a bumpy curve and it takes some time. And that's why, you know, staying in the game is so critical. And your mindset about, look, I'm in it for the long term. Everything that I try that doesn't work is an experiment that I can learn from to make adjustments so that in the end, I'll figure it out and I'll get to where I want to be.
What would be your advice to the younger part of my audience, the younger group of people that are just starting out, maybe they're in college or just graduating, and you know, they don't really know what they want to do. They may be saying, yeah, I want to do this financial services thing, but you know, whatever, you know how we were when we came out of college. You may have been a little unsure. How can they have a vision? How can they start to create vision? Do you have any specific tips or maybe an exercise that they can do to help them formulate or start to crystallize around a vision? Because they may think it's too early for me to have a vision in my life, which I disagree with, but go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I disagree with that. One of the things we see with people in their 20s is when they do create visions, they're grandiose because they feel like they got all this runway in front of them in terms of a life. And so what I would advise is bringing that vision real near term so that you get out of this notion that, oh, it's okay. I've got my whole career. I got 40 years ahead of me. Work on shorter timeframes, even when it comes to the vision, right? Because you'll get after it quicker. And I think what'll happen is you'll develop the habits and the characteristics that drive success. There will be some struggles along the way, but any progress you can make allows you then to lean on your past abilities, remind yourself that, hey, you've been successful in the past, you've been be even more successful in the future. So the first thing would be create the longer term vision, but recognize that you need something near term, right? I see we work with folks and they've got three houses and all these sports cars and all this, which is a great vision, right? And there's other things than just material things. But it's so far off that, you know, I could own the world. Let's bring it more near term and say, okay, where do you want to be 3 years from now? And it might be that, you know, I've got 20 grand in the bank or something like that. Maybe more tangible for them that would cause them to act more. So we talk about, you know, live with long-term vision, act with short-term urgency. And I think that's the key.
No, right? I love the urgency. That was the word that was coming to mind when you were saying that is, there has to be something that's a catalyst or something. I hate to use the image of the whip being cracked behind you, but it's something that makes you get up in the morning and motivates you towards something that you want to accomplish, right?
Right, right. And if it's too far off in the distance, you know, you can sleep in, you can get up late, you can skip a day. So, and what happens then is, you know, I meet people that are in their 50s and 60s and they had those dreams back then and they were dreams, they weren't visions because they never acted on them. And now they're disappointed and you can't go back and make up. And so, you know, having that vision, but the willingness to act on it, right? In the end, it's all about the execution. It's all about the execution.
I think that's a so good segue. Let's talk about execution. Let's talk about your system because I've used it. I've bought in, I'm invested. I definitely agree with it. You know, there's no remuneration going back and forth here. This is just a guy that eventually, I'll tell the story real quick. So I think I read this originally listened to it on Audible originally. It was a recommendation from a colleague. And then not too long ago, I was like, okay, let me get the book. Got the book. And so I kind of cursory glanced through it then. But then all of a sudden at the beginning of this year, right around my birthday, I was like, you know what? I'm tired of these hodgepodge system. I want something to go to start executing on the things that I want and that I feel are important. So I picked it back up and I was on my way to church and I listened to it. And then when I came back home, I read the rest of it. So it's a short read. You can get it in a day if you want to. But it's an excellent system. And I say all that to set up, like, kind of give us an overview of why this is so effective for so many people.
I think one of the reasons is that there's this tendency to think that what's going to create greater success for us is some new nugget of knowledge or information that I don't know, some new system, some new technique, some secret, right? When the fact of the matter is if you just did what you already know more consistently, you'd be healthier, you'd be happier, you'd make a lot more money. And so people are off chasing new ideas, and especially in our industry, right? There's always one new thing around for financial advisors. And not that that's a bad thing, but it's worthless unless you act on it, unless you implement. And so if you think about your selling system, your referral system, your servicing, you know, your branding, all of that, you've got to implement all of that. And so the one system most individuals lack, the one system most organizations lack, is the system that drives everything else. That's the execution system. Because we talk about it's not enough to know, right? The marketplace only rewards the things that get implemented. And it's the same in your personal life. And And so the 12-week year is the execution system. It brings together a set of disciplines and principles that drive high performance, that drive high execution, and then it bundles them in the context of 12 weeks as a year, where there's a healthy sense of urgency in that environment. You know, 12 weeks is a long enough time to make amazing progress, but near enough where you don't lose sight of the deadline, where it's really difficult to go, oh, I got plenty of time. And so the combination of taking the fundamentals that drive high performance and then bundling them with the 12 weeks as the year is what makes it so powerful for folks, because it causes them to act more consistently. Not perfectly. The beauty is you don't need to be perfect. You're just more consistent with the things that matter most. It's not about cramming everything you would do in 12 months into 12 weeks. It's really about narrowing it down and really acting on the things that have the greatest impact.
No, I agree with that. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I was recently watching, I would just call it the new improved Steph Curry. I forgot he went through an injury and he went through all this training, and I was just looking at him go up and down the court. And this is, you know, true for anybody that makes it to the NBA level, but especially a top athlete like himself. And you see him taking these 35-foot shots, like they're free throws. It's because there's a consistency, there's a routine. Like, we don't see the behind the scenes where he takes 500 or 1,000 shots of practice or anything like that, right? And so I think the key around this 12-week, at least for me, has been just building in the consistency of these actions that I know will make me reach my goal as long as I just show up. All I got to do is show up and execute. And it's not anything like this rocket science, but it's, you know, let's be honest. Like, we get lazy. Like, we're like, I'll skip a day, or I don't have to go to the gym this day. And you add up all those days after a couple of months or whatever, and it's a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the notion of greatness in the moment, right? The difference between mediocre and great in the moment is very small, right? On a weekly basis for an advisor, it's a couple more meetings a week. It's five more phone calls a day. It's delegating that some of that admin stuff. On a daily, weekly basis, doesn't look much different, but over a number of weeks and months, it's huge in terms of the outcomes and the impact.
Well, cool. Yeah, we're gonna make sure that we link. I know you shared a special link for the guest, and we'll make sure we put that in the show notes. This has been really great, man. As you know, this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level, the best level, their highest best use, as we talked about today. With that being said, Brian, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with our audience?
Yeah, don't get worried about it being perfect. Don't be worried about making mistakes. You know, I cut a video that helping people rethink about failure. And the people that are most successful, they fail faster. And so get that mindset right that, you know, Winston Churchill said, actually, I'm going to give you a different quote. I'll give you one from Vince Lombardi. One of my favorite from Vince Lombardi's, the famous football coach, said, it's not whether or not you get knocked down, it's whether or not you get up again. And so there's a mindset there that just says, look, I'm going to get knocked down. It's part of the gig. I'm not worried about that. And I'm going to get out there and I'm going to play my hardest every day and play my best. And I know that if I do that enough and I'm paying attention and I'm willing to do things differently and learn from it, I'm going to be successful in life. And I think that's the key. You know, reframe how you think about failure. Too many people are worried about, well, what if I fail? So what? You don't control the outcomes anyways. All you control is the action. So put everything you have into it. Where it ends up, it ends up. You'll learn from it. You'll adjust, and you'll get to where you want to get to.
I love that, man. Just show up. Just show up.
Yeah. Show up with your best stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been great, man. You've given us a lot of tools to think about it . I definitely want people to check out the 12-week year. I think it's one of those things that it's so cool because you can start it at any point in the year. Like, you can you can just get in and be like, okay, I got me a new year going right here, right?
And if there you go.
You know, that first 12 weeks doesn't, you bump in your, you know, scrape your knees and fall down, start it again. You can, it's so cool that you can do it that way. Yeah. So I really, really appreciate the work that you've put into that and what you've done with your company and everything that you guys are doing over there. Really, really excited for you guys and the work that you do. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this time with the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. My pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Hope it's beneficial.
Take care, Brian.
All right. Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I'd love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.